I from Fumona after getting soaking wet ducking under that waterfall yonder. I hate to be macabre, Edmund said. Whatever that means, Preacher said. But what happens if you don't return? You sit tight until your supplies is just about gone. By that time, if you don't eat all the damn day long, Bum and his boys will have given up and gone. Then you head west. That's the direction the sun sets. If you come to a great big body of water, that's the Pacific Ocean. You'll either be in California or Oregon country.
You don't have to be insulting, Penelope said.
Preacher stared at her for a moment, then shook his head. He was muttering as he got his bow and quiver of arrows and left the cave and headed out into the meadow, walking toward the waterfall. Melody stood in the mouth of the cave and watched him until he ducked behind the cascading water and was gone from sight. Penelope was lying down, exhausted from the travels, and Edmund was seeing to the horses. He's quite a man, Melody, Richard said softly, but not the man for you. She turned slowly and faced him.
Whatever in the world do you mean, Richard?
It's easy to see that you're quite smitten with him, Melody. We've all commented on it, but I urge you to think about what you're doing and to try and curb your emotions. The man is a wanderer, a will-o'-the-wisp. He'll only break your heart.
It's purely platonic, Richard, she lied.
Nothing more. I enjoy his company, that's all.
He's a fascinating man who has packed 10 average lifetimes into one.
Melody, I don't want to appear ungrateful for all he's done for us. He saved our lives and continues to do so hourly. But the man is only a cut above a savage. I doubt he's had a fork in his hand in 10 years. He eats with his fingers. The two of you come from different worlds. She smiled and patted his arm.
You worry needlessly, Richard. Come, let me change the dressing on your ear. In years to come, no matter where we might be, we'll look back on this episode and enjoy a good laugh.
Preacher got his first deer within moments of entering the blowdown. He quickly but carefully skinned and butchered it, leaving the waste parts for critters of the forest to eat. There would be no trace of the animal come the morning. He put the eatable parts in the hide, and using a length of rope he'd brought, he hung the meat high from a limb to protect it. It took him an hour to find, stalk, and bring down the second deer. He heard a rustling in the dense brush and knew that wolves had caught the blood scent and were closing. 3 big gray wolves, a male and 2 females. Preacher tossed them liver, intestines, and other scrap parts, shouldered his load, and headed back toward the valley. Lots of folks feared wolves, but most of that fear was groundless. Preacher had never known of a healthy, full-grown wolf ever, unprovoked, attacking a human being. But a starving or hurt wolf was quite another matter. And when any animal is eating a kill or hiding the carcass for a later snack, you best leave that animal alone. And they also get might protective when it comes to their young. He left the wolves snarling in mock anger and tearing at the meat parts. Enjoy it, brothers, he said. Preacher rather liked wolves. He'd had several as companions from time to time. They had not been pets, for a wolf cannot be domesticated like a dog. And if you're going to be around them, you got to know their ways. They don't conform to human ways. A man's got to conform to their ways. Once that's settled, a man can be fairly comfortable around wolves. You just can't never let them get the upper hand. For once they do, it takes a fight for dominance to regain it. And you ain't likely to come out in too good a shape fighting no 200-pound buffalo wolf. Preacher figured he was packing close to 150 pounds of raw meat, for the deer had both been sleek and fat. It had been an early spring with lots to eat, but he'd carried more than that for longer periods of time. He was back in the cave by nightfall and had some steak sizzling moments later. We'll smoke and jerk the rest of it, he told them. Tomorrow, I'll pick some berries and we'll make pemmican. What in the world is that? Richard asked. After the meat's dried, that's what we call jerky. I'll pound it into a powder and mix it with pulps and whole berries and the fat I saved from the venison after I cook it down. You mix all that up and it keeps for a long time. I got some over there in my parflesh. Try some. It's good.
What is a parflesh? Melody asked.
Rawhide case yonder. Hand it here. The preacher stuffed some pemmican into his mouth and smiled. I ain't kidding, y'all. It's really good. He passed the parflesh around, and the others reluctantly tried some of the concoction. They all smiled as they chewed.
It really is good, Edmund said.
Y'all gonna bring Jesus to the savages, preacher said. I reckon now's a good time to start your learning. You got to know something about these folks.
We were to be instructed in Oregon, Richard said.
Why? Preacher said in disgust. Them's coast Indians. Klamath and Tillamook and Chinook and Spokane and Pomo and Chumash and the like. Hell, they all about either civilized or whooped down by now. I'm talking Indians, folks. Scalp hunters and warriors. And the finest horsemen on the face of the earth. Comanche, Pawnee, Ute, Shoshone, Apache, Blackfoot, Arapaho, Crow, Kiowa, Flathead, Assiniboine, Dakota. That Sioux to you, and Nez Perce. There's more, but them's the important ones you'll be seeing, I imagine. Most of the ones I just named is hunters and warriors. Only ones I know of that'll grow anything to eat to amount to anything is your Hidatsa, Navajo, Pima, Pueblo, and Papago. Most of them is down in the southwest, except for the Hidatsa, and what's left of them is scattered along the northern borders. Mandan and Pawnee will raise a few crops, mostly corn, beans, squash, and pumpkin. They trade a lot with other tribes. You watch a Pawnee when you're trading. They're slick. Blackfoot, Crow, and Comanche won't eat fish. It's taboo to them. Your desert tribes roast snake and insects. Richard, you asked me a couple of days back about how Injuns cook and what they eat. You'd be surprised. I've lived with Injuns that could whoop up a buffalo stew that'd leave you smacking your lips for days. Injuns ain't like white folks in that they don't waste nothing. And I mean nothing. They break the bones and boil the marrow or just suck it out. They clean and scrape out the guts and make sausage cases out of them, stuffing them with seasoned meat. They're good with nature's own wild things. They season with sage and wild onions and milkweed buds and rose hips. They peel the prickly pear cactus and add that to stews and soups. It was Injuns that taught me to peel fresh sweet thistle stalks and eat it. Tastes kind of like nuts. Injuns ain't got pots like we use, so when they make a stew, they use the lining from a buffalo stomach. You get your four poles, secure the ends of the lining, dump in some meat and stuff like prairie turnips and wild peas. To make the water boil, the women drop in hot rocks. The pouch will last 3-4 days until it gets soggy. Then you eat the lining. They don't waste nothing. Injuns use every part of the animal they can. The thick pelt from a buffalo's neck can be made into a shield. Animals killed in winter has a special use because the hair is long and thick. They use them for blankets and robes. Rawhide is made into strings and ropes. Buffalo hair is woven into ropes. Buffalo horns is used for everything from spoons to gourds. Injuns used to make knives out of buffalo bones. Injuns use buffalo hides to make their teepees. And a teepee is not only a home, it's a sacred place to the Injun. The floor means the earth that they live on, the walls which is peaked is the sky. They're round because that is the sacred life circle, which ain't got no beginning or no end. Get it? A circle. And Injuns will always burn something that smells good in their teepees. Sage or sweet grass. It's an altar to them. That's where they pray to their gods. An inference that none of the missionaries missed. Preacher took one of the deer steaks out of the pan and fell to eating. With his knife and fingers. Around a mouthful of meat, Preacher said, the teepee belongs to the Injun women of the plains. And don't ever let nobody tell you no different. The women make 'em, they put 'em up, they take 'em down, they haul 'em around. A man lives there only if the woman wants him to. She can chuck his possessions outside and the marriage is over. And he damn well better scat. How many hides does it take to make a teepee? Melody asked. Anywhere from 7 to 30, depends on the size of the lodge. It's a social thing for the women, kind of like a barn raising to you folks. Say a Cheyenne needs a new lodge. The word goes out and the women gather. Among them, one woman who's the official lodge maker. After the woman who's needing a new lodge feeds them all good, they start sewing the skins together, usually starting early in the morning. Then they'll eat again, and it's back to sewing and gossiping and giggling and singing and carrying on. Takes a day, and a new lodge is up.
Then they have order in their societies? Edmund asked.
Men away. The Plains Indians don't much cotton to someone telling them what to do. Preacher stuffed the last of his meat into his mouth, chewed for a moment, swallowed, then belched loudly. You got to belch after a meal. Means the grub was good. If you don't belch, your host might be offended because he'll think you didn't like his woman's cooking. Always belch after a meal with the Indians. At least the ones I've been around. Minges is pretty much free to come and go as they please in the tribe. Contrary to what you've probably been taught, the Plains Indians ain't got no elected nor passed down leadership. Even a chief ain't got the power to punish nobody. To get to be a chief means that the rest of the tribe respects that man's wisdom, his courage, or even how well he can talk. Every male is a member of the council, and every man has the right to state his opinions. And they all do. It can go on for days. My reckon tradition might be the glue that keeps tribes together. I don't know what else could do it. All the tribes are different, but yet they're strangely alike in a lot of ways. When the white man finally gets up a head of steam and starts coming this away, and they will, there's going to be a lot of blood spilled on both sides. At first, it's going to be mostly white people who die, but that won't last long. From what I've been able to pick up during the past few years, east of the Big Muddy is fairly overflowing with people. They got to come west. The Indians ain't going to adopt the white ways. And the whites ain't gonna adopt the Indian ways. So what we're gonna have, to my way of thinking, is a great big bloody mess that's gonna go on for years.
Then the savages have to be convinced that they cannot stand in the way of progress, Edmund said. That's where people like us can help.
Preacher looked at him in the dancing light of the fire. He smiled rather sadly. White man's way is the only way, huh? He shook his head and poured a cup of coffee. We sure take a lot upon ourselves, don't we?
Civilization and progress must continue if we as a nation are to survive, Richard said. That's the way it's always been and must continue to be.
Says who? Preacher challenged.
This discussion is silly, Edmund said. You obviously are not prepared to meet the challenge of a changing world. You missed the point of it all.
Oh, I get the point, the mountain man said. And lots of other folks will, too. The point of an arrow.
5. Preacher spent the next morning backtracking the way they entered the cave, carefully erasing all signs of anyone ever having come that way. He spent a couple of hours inspecting the sides of the narrow passageway, picking off hair the horses left as they rubbed the sides here and there. When he was satisfied he could do no more to ensure their safety, Preacher rejoined the group in the cave. Any sign of them? Edmund inquired, lifting his eyes from the Bible he'd been reading.
No, but they'll be along. White women's too grand a prize for them to give up on, and they probably figure you're carrying gold.
That's ridiculous, Richard said.
Really? Them money belts y'all totin' don't fit too well. They pooch out from time to time.
Richard and Edmund automatically put hands to their bellies.
Yep, Preacher said, pouring coffee. Gold and women. Many a man has died for that combination. how much you boys carrying?"
"That is none of your affair," Edmund bluntly stated.
"You're right," Preacher replied easily. "It ain't. But if I'm to put my life on the line for you folks, I figure I at least ought to know what I'm dying for."
"This money," Richard said, patting his belly, "must get to our new mission in Oregon. It isn't ours. This is money raised by our organization back east. Contributors' money. This is money that will be used to further God's work."
"You ain't got no poor folks back in Philadelphia could use a helping hand. Must be quite a prosperous place," Preacher said sarcastically. "Rich folks abounding everywhere. I sure wouldn't fit in."
Richard sighed heavily, and Melody laughed at the expression on her friend's face.
"And didn't nobody ever tell y'all that it ain't fitting for unmarried young men and women to go traipsing off unchaperoned? What did you girls' mamas and daddies think about this trip?"
"We left with their blessings," Penelope said. "They know that we are both very trustworthy and level-headed women." She looked at Melody. "One of us is, anyway."
Melody reached over and patted the young woman on the leg.
"Don't worry, dear. I'll look after you. I did promise your mother."
Bum Kelly and his boys patiently searched, and as Preacher had predicted, found the trail after Preacher had left the rocks of the creek.
"He's heading into the wilderness," Beckman said, just a touch of awe in his voice.
"You know that country, Bum?"
Bum shook his head.
"Can't say as I do. I've skirted it a time or two, taking the south route. But that damn Preacher seems to know every rock between the borders and between the Big Muddy and the ocean. And he turned north right into the Tetons, damn his eyes."
The outlaw stood on the fringe of the mountain range and gazed at the towering peaks that stood silently before them.
"How old a man is this feller, anyways?" a man called Keyes asked.
35 or so, I reckon. He came out here, so the stories go, back when he was about 12 or 13 years old. And he ain't never stopped exploring. So he's got 20 or so years of experience behind his belt, and he's as tricky as they come."
"He know you, Bum?" Bobby asked.
"He knows me, and he don't like me."
"Hey," Slug shouted. "Here comes Jack Harris. I knowed he'd catch up with us."
Jack swung down from the saddle wearily. His clothing was in rags, and he looked gaunt.
"Put some grub on, boys," Jack said. "I ain't eatin' days."
A fire was hurriedly built, and a thick deer steak jammed on a pointed stick. A blackened coffee pot filled with creek water was soon boiling, and the coffee dumped in. Jack was so worn out he could hardly keep his eyes open. A cup of thick, strong coffee perked him up enough to talk, while the cooking steak caused drool to appear on the man's lips.
"What happened back yonder at the wagon train, Jack?" Bum asked.
"Them engines came out of nowhere, I tell you. I didn't have a clue they was there. I jumped off the flat and hit the timber at the first yell because I could see we didn't have a chance. The outriders went down first. I don't know what happened after that. I was too busy flogging my good horse getting away from there. I waited 2 days, I think it was, and went back looking for food, but I couldn't find nothing except in some bloody bandages and shod tracks heading west. You boys and somebody else's. I just started following along."
"Preacher," Bum said.
"I recognize that big gray of his through my spyglass. He's got them gospel shouters and the women with him. He knows we're on his trail and he's wary."
Jack was instantly alert.
"Preacher? What the hell's he doing up here? He's supposed to be down on the Poposia at the rendezvous."
"Well, he ain't. And he's tooken them folks into the wilderness." He pointed yonder.
"In there?" Jack said, with horror in his voice.
"Northwest to the Talking Smoke?" "I don't think so. I think he's got him a hidey hole in the Lonesome yonder, and he's all tucked away thinking he's safe."
"He's pretty damn safe in there, Bum. I don't know that country."
Hell, don't nobody really know that country.
Well, a few does, and Preacher's one of them.
Bum looked hard at the man.
You want to give up?
Jack jerked the half-raw steak from the stick and went to gnawing. He finally shook his head and wiped the grease from his mouth with the back of his hand.
No.
Them two men was carrying heavy with gold. He belched and farted and tore off another hunk of bloody meat.
And them women, boys, I swear I ain't never seen nothing so fine in all my days.
How fine? A thug named Leo asked, leaning closer to Jack, his thick lips slick with spittle.
Fine enough to fight a grizzly for.
Bet they smell good, too, Bull said. I just can't hardly wait.
The ladies had gone down to the waterfall to bathe and wash clothes, using soap they had salvaged from the ruins of the wagon train. Preacher sat on the outside of the cave exit, overlooking the valley. He had carefully cleaned his weapons and placed them at the ready. He knew it was only a matter of time before they would be found. No one is good enough to obliterate all signs of their passing, not if there's a good tracker behind them. And while Bum's people were no goods, they had survived in the mountains for years, so that made them professional in anybody's book. Preacher doubted that Bum's boys would have the patience to explore the blowdown, so the rear entrance was reasonably secure. But one or two of them would be brave enough or curious enough to follow the twisting passageway once it was located. And it would be located, he felt sure of that. So let them come on. They would die in that twisting maze, and the silent rock walls would be their coffins. Preacher had spent the morning rigging deadfalls and other traps in the darkness of the twisting entranceway. He had warned the others not to enter there. To make his point, he had showed them one of his traps and how lethal it was.
Hideous, Edmund said. Awful, Penelope whispered.
Such a terrible thing to do to a person, Richard said.
I just hope it works, Melody said.
It'll work, Preacher thought, as he honed his already sharp knife to a razor's edge. The first one to hit the traps will make the others awful cautious. But they'll press on. The second trap will stop them cold, maybe for a day. By that time, we'll be far away and pushing hard.
You didn't just stop here for safety's sake, did you, Preacher?
Richard asked, breaking into the mountain man's thoughts.
What else you think I had on my mind? Preacher looked at him.
You knew we needed several days of rest, the missionary said, and pegged it right.
My wound needed to heal, and we all needed to lay about and eat and regain strength. But you alone would have been 100 miles away by now. You're risking your life for people you hardly know. You're a very brave and complex man, Mr. What is your Christian name?
Preacher'll do. Yeah, there's some truth in me wanting to get you folks rested some. When we leave here, we're going to be pushing hard with not much time to rest. There's a small fort down near Massacre Rocks on the Snake. Fort Hall, I believe it's called. Few soldier boys down yonder, but it's going to be hell getting there. If I can get y'all to the fort, that'll put you back on the Oregon Trail, and it being springtime and all, chances are good a wagon train is there, or one will be along shortly.
And you'll leave us there? Edmund asked.
Why should I stay any longer?
Melody, if I may speak frankly, Edmund said.
Fine-looking woman. Good woman, too, I believe. Got staying power to her. I like her. I'll say that in front of God and everybody. And it's both an uncomfortable and yet nice feeling. Been a long time since I experienced anything like it. But our worlds is different. Too far apart. I don't fit in hers, and she sure as hell don't fit into mine. So relax, Pilgrim. You won't see me again. This is my world. The mountains, the wilderness, the open sky. I plan on dying out here. My good horse will stumble, or an engine's arrow or war axe will find me. I might get concerned by a bear, and we'll have us a high old time, a roaring and a yelling and a clawed and a biting and a stabbing till one of us is down. He smiled, showing amazingly good teeth, and softened his facial features.
She don't fit in them plans.
Richard smiled. I believe she might have something to say about that.
She might think she do, but she don't. Oh, I know the signs, all right. I can see them on her face and in her eyes. But once I leave the lot of you at Fort Hall, I'm gone like the wind. I got mountains to climb and rivers to ford. I got valleys to cross where the grass is so lush and high it brushes the belly of my horse. I got to see country I ain't never seen before. I can't do that with no woman tagging along. Not unless it's a squaw who's used to the hard ways of the trail.
Preacher stood up.
You boys stay put. And when the women gets back, y'all start getting your possibilities together. I'm fixing to move some things close to that blowdown hole.
You think those hooligans are close? Edmund asked.
I think they're right outside.
Preacher scrambled up the sloping sides of the valley and stepped into a maze of virgin brush and timber. The bench that encircled the little valley was about 300 yards deep. He made his way carefully to the outer edge and was not surprised to see Bum and several of his gang moving slowly toward the rock face, a tracker on foot carefully studying the ground. Preacher backed off and silently made his way back to the cave.
No talking, he whispered. They're outside now. Get your gear together and get gone to the waterfall. You'll see a natural lean-to on the north side of the falls. It's big enough for all of you and the horses. Take my pack horse with you. There's my gear. No fires. Get gone, like right now.
The men were gone in 10 minutes, gathering up their gear and heading out toward the horses. Preacher quickly packed up what he would carry out and set the pack by the mouth of the cave. Then he drank what coffee was left in the pot, packed the pot away, and carefully put out the fire. He went outside and saddled his horse, then sat back and waited, his 54 caliber Hawken at the ready. He knew it was only a matter of time now, and probably not that much time. He had lied to the others about how safe they would be in the cave in order to give them some comfort and let them relax. It had worked, and all of them, even Richard, were back up to snuff and ready for the trail. Preacher knew that a good tracker would find the cave opening. Whether or not they would search the entire twisting, turning passageway was up for grabs. Preacher had, years back, but he'd also been wary of running into a bear or a mountain lion. He hoped the men out there now would be twice as wary as he was. But they had women and gold on their minds. He heard a very faint scraping sound and slowly rose, moving silently toward the entrance to the passageway. They had found the opening. He had rigged the first deadfall in such a manner that as dark as it was in that narrow passage, they would probably think it was just an accident. The second trap would be a hell of a lot more obvious to anyone that it was man-made. Dark in there, Bull said, his words not reaching Preacher, who was crouched near the opening, waiting.
What the hell did you think it would be? Beckman asked. A lamp-lit roadhouse? Can you see anything at all?
Nothing. Narrow trail is all. Don't look wide enough for no horse to get through.
Jack Harris shouldered his way into the passage.
It's wide enough. Dirt's too smooth for my liking. It looks like it's been smoothed out by a branch to me.
Maybe, Bull said. There damn sure ain't no puma or bear tracks in the dirt.
There ain't nothing on that dirt. See that opening high up? He pointed upward to the tiny crack. It's rained lately here. Drops would have cut the groove in the dirt. He had to hide his tracks, but Preacher was hoping we wouldn't notice that.
I noticed.
They's in yonder somewhere, boys.
Knowing Preacher is a-layin' in wait in that dark don't make me feel real good, Jack,
Beckman said.
You know damn well he ain't no pilgrim.
He ain't but one man, Jack replied. Move. Let's search this place, see where it leads.
Preacher had heard only the murmur of voices. He had not been able to make out any of the words.
He really didn't need to. He figured they were coming on in.
Bull was the first to inch forward into the dimness of the passageway, moving in a crouch and advancing very carefully. He was a thug and a murderer, but not an idiot. He knew perfectly well that if Preacher was at the end of this winding, twisting passageway, it would mean a fight to the death. His fingers touched a rock about the size of a human head. He pushed it aside. That released a tight rawhide thong that whipped out and up, disappearing out of sight and releasing about a dozen other large rocks. "Slide!" Jack hollered, jumping back as he heard the sound. Bull jerked back, but not fast enough to avoid getting conked on the head by a rock. The impact laid him out cold on the ground, a swelling knot on his noggin. "Pull him out of there," Jack said, and he and Beckman tugged at the limp Bull and dragged him out of the passageway, back out into the light.
"Is he dead?" Leo asked. "I don't think so," Beckman said, "but he's sure gonna have him a headache."
"I think he moved a rock and that triggered the slide," Jack said. "It was a trap."
"You think Preacher done it?" Bum asked.
"Yeah, I do. And there's probably more traps in yonder."
"And Preacher and them others could be long gone,"
Keys pointed out.
"Could be," Bum said. "But I don't think so. I think they hold up in yonder for rest. One of them's hurt. We've all seen the bloody bandages. The size of them tells me it's either a thigh or head wound. Moses, fetch us some long poles to push along ahead of us and wave in the air. That'll set off any traps Preacher might have laid."
All but the last one. Preacher had taken a small keg of powder salvaged from the wagon train and rigged up a fuse. He had placed the keg between a large rock and the face of the stone wall. When it blew, he felt there would be enough force behind the blast to bring the boulder down and block the passageway. Preacher could now hear the sounds of sticks whapping the sides of the passageway. "Smart," he thought. "I ain't dealing with idiots. I'll have to remember that." Preacher grinned as the sounds of the sticks striking the earth and the rock walls drew closer. He cocked one of his pistols and let it bang. The sound was enormous in the cave, and he got what he was hoping for.
"Oh my God!"
Beckman hollered in pain as the wildly ricocheting lead struck him in the leg.
"I caught me a ball. Oh God, it tore up my leg. Get out of there. Get me out of here."
Preacher let bang another ball. He could hear the ugly sound of the ball as it howled from wall to wall, bouncing and careening, looking for a place to strike.
"Get back," Jack hollered. "Drag Beckman out of there. We got to come up with another plan. It's a death trap in yonder."
"I can't walk," Beckman bellowed. "Oh, my leg's tore up bad, y'all."
Preacher was reloading as fast as he could, with ball, patch, powder, and ram. He capped his pistols and waited.
"Preacher,"
Bum yelled,
"you give us the women and the gold and you can walk free. That's a promise, man."
"Go to hell," Preacher shouted.
"Don't be a fool, Preacher. You're trapped in yonder. Think about it. All we gotta do is wait and starve you out. We got the time and you ain't. Them pilgrims ain't worth your dying for, man. Give it some thought."
"Ask him if he's got some whiskey to pour on his leg," Beckman said.
Bum gave the man a disgusted look. Preacher waited.
"One way or the other, we're gonna get you, Preacher,"
Bum yelled, his words echoing around the twisting passageway.
"All you got to do is walk out of there and you're a free man."
"In a pig's eye," Preacher muttered. He knew they'd kill him on sight. Preacher settled down for a long wait. 6. "So who's got a plan?" Jack asked. The gang was sitting well away into the side of the opening in the mountain. They had dug the flattened ball out of Beckman's leg, and he lay moaning in pain while Moses rambled around in the woods, gathering up various leaves with which to make a poultice.
"Why not smoke 'em out?" Leo suggested. "It's a cave, ain't it?" That ain't a bad idea, Bum said. As a matter of fact, it's a damn good idea. Let's start gathering up all the wood we can tote. He thought for a moment. No, I got a better idea. We'll build us a shield out of small branches. Lash half a dozen good-sized branches together and stay behind it while we advance. That'll protect us from ricochets, and we can get right up on Preacher. When we get close enough, we can toss burning pitch over into the cave proper and really smoke 'em out. The thugs all agreed that Bum had come up with a fine plan. The first log shield they lashed together was too wide and got hung up in the first turn in the passageway. Preacher sat back in the cave and listened to them cuss and holler. He chewed on jerky and waited. When they finally got the right size shield lashed together, it didn't take them long to get close. Preacher had bellied down on the dirt, his 50-caliber pistols in hand. When the men rounded the long curve that would lead them to the cave, Preacher smiled at the sight. The men were holding the shield about 6 inches off the passageway floor. Preacher fired both pistols, keeping the muzzles about 3 inches off the ground. Two of the thugs started squalling in pain as the balls tore into one's foot and the other's ankle, shattering bone. The shield was dropped to the earth and forward movement halted while the two wounded men were stretched out on the earth to be dragged out into the clearing. I'll kill you for this, Preacher, Slug bellered. I'll skin you alive, damn your eyes. I'll do worse than that, Preacher, Bobby screamed over the pain in his shattered foot. You'll rue the day you shot me, you dirty bastard. You tore off in some toes, damn you. When I get my hands on you, it'll take you days to die, you sorry son. Yeah, yeah, Preacher muttered, reloading. Flap your mouth, boy. He chuckled. He had put three of them out of action so far. He was cutting down the odds right good, he figured. Preacher popped another piece of jerky in his mouth and waited. Then the gang got real quiet. He knew they were up to something, and he didn't think it was going to be pleasant. It wasn't. They started chucking lit torches into the cave. Preacher grinned and began chucking them right back, figuring he might get lucky and set someone on fire. He did. Help! Keyes yelled. My britches is on fire. Help me beat it out, boys. Jesus Christ, oh Lord, it's a burning my leg. Help! Preacher chucked several more burning brands behind the shield. God damn it, Bum! A man yelled. This ain't working out like you said it would. Well, hell's fire, Adam. I never said it would be perfect now, did I? Ow! Somebody kicked some dirt on my britches leg. Jesus, it's on fire. Hurry up, damn it. Now you know how I feel, Keyes hollered. Preacher felt it was time to add even more confusion to the yelling knot of thugs. He had prepared a small bag of powder. A bag bomb, as Richard had called it, while watching the mountain man make it. And now he took it out of his possibles pouch and lit the fuse. He tossed it over the top of the log shield. Holy Christ, he heard a man yell. Run, it's a damn bomb. The small grenade really didn't do a lot of damage when it exploded, but in the confined space of the passageway, it sounded a lot more dangerous than it really was. It also peppered the thugs with small rocks and pebbles when it blew, stinging and bloodying the men. Preacher leaned back and laughed at the sounds of panic echoing all around him. Damn you, Preacher! George hollered, then immediately fell into a coughing fit due to all the dust. Why don't you fight fair, man? Idiot, Preacher muttered. There ain't no such of a thing as a fair fight. Oh, I can't walk, Rod moaned. The bomb done crippled me. Don't abandon me, boys. Fool, Bum yelled. That's Leo sitting on your legs. You ain't hurt. The whole side of my face is bloody, Adam squalled. Look at me. Did it blow my face off, boys? Preacher scooped up a double handful of dirt and wrapped it up in a piece of cloth. He fashioned a fuse and lit it. He yelled, Here comes another one, boys. Then he chucked it over the logs. Wild panic broke out in the narrow space as the outlaws began screaming and cussing and literally running over each other in their haste to depart the scene. Preacher crawled forward, pushing the burning brands the thugs had tossed into the cave in front of him. He stacked them up all around the front of the lashed-together logs, and then hustled back around the bend in the passageway to safety.
"It was a dud," Jack shouted.
"Long burning fuse," Preacher yelled.
"You're a liar, Preacher," Bum shouted.
"Look," Moses shouted, "the barricade's on fire. Grab some dirt and put it out, boys," Bum yelled.
Preacher decided he'd had enough fun and lit the long fuse leading to the charge behind the rocks above the barricade. He grabbed his gear and headed out the mouth of the cave. He figured he had maybe 30 seconds to vacate the area before all that powder blew. He misjudged it slightly. The fuse burned quickly and then touched the powder. The concussion rocked the ground beneath his moccasins when it exploded. The huge rock and dozens of smaller ones came tumbling down, completely blocking the passage and sealing that entrance to the little valley. One rock bounced off Moses' head and knocked the thug sprawling to the earth, addling him. Jack Harris took a stone right between the eyes and it knocked him cold. Bum Kelly assessed the damage and threw his hat to the ground and cursed. In the valley, sitting his saddle, Preacher threw back his head and howled like a great gray wolf. Then he laughed and headed for the waterfall. Preacher led his party through the blowdown and headed westward into the Grand Tetons. He figured he had bought them at least 2 days, and maybe as many as 4. Behind him, Bum Kelly and his outlaws had staggered out of the passageway to fall exhausted on the ground. All of them were cut, bruised, and bleeding from wounds ranging from minor to serious.
"Let's start checking each other out,"
Bum finally spoke, heaving himself up off the ground. He swayed slightly on his boots.
"Unless you boys want to give up on getting the gold and them women."
The outlaws gave him grim looks.
"Not damn likely,"
Bum muttered darkly.
"But I want Preacher worser than I want anything else. I want to stick his feet into a fire and burn him slow."
"Yeah,"
Bobby moaned the word. He looked at the bloody bandage that covered where some toes had been. He was alternately working on a piece of deerskin, making a crude moccasin, and moaning through his pain.
"I want to gouge his eyes out."
"I'm going to cut him,"
Beckman said.
"And that's just for starters."
He looked at his wounded leg and cussed. Slug was splinting his broken ankle over the damage done by the 50-caliber ball.
"I'm going to rape both them women and make Preacher watch. Then I'm going to skin him. Slow."
Bum smiled grimly. He knew there would be no stopping these men now. Now it was a matter of honor with them. Preacher had shamed them all, and if need be, they would track him right up to and through the gates of hell for revenge. But, Bum thought, to make matters even worser, as soon as Preacher reached some post or settlement, he would tell the story and really juice it up. Unless he was stopped, Bum and his boys would be the laughing stock of the territories. He knew the others had the same thought. They couldn't none of them allow that to happen. They had to close Preacher's mouth. Forever. Preacher would chuckle occasionally as he built a fire to cook their supper. "I fail to see what is so amusing about inflicting pain and suffering upon your fellow man," Edmund said. Preacher looked at the missionary.
"Do you have any idea what them old boys back yonder will do to you if they catch you?"
"Rob us," Preacher chuckled.
"You really are a babe in the woods, ain't you? Well, let me tell you something. If they catch you people, after they get tired of using the women, then they'll use you men. You get my drift?"
"I don't believe that," Edmund said. "That would be, well, barbaric."
"It sure would, but they'd still do it. Then they'd torture you just to listen to you scream. They've done it all before. Ain't nothing new to none of them. They've been doing it for years and years.
Why don't the authorities stop them? Richard asked.
Good God, people,
Preacher blurted in exasperation. Look around you. What authorities? There ain't no law out here. This is wilderness. Can't you people understand that?
The army is the authority in wilderness areas, I believe, Edmund said. When we reach this fort you spoke of, we shall certainly report the reprehensible behavior of those ruffians who attacked the cave.
Sure, Preacher replied. People, this land is in dispute between England and the United States. There might not be soldiers there. Besides, ain't but about 500 million billion acres out there. Hell, they ought to be able to search that in no time at all.
He shook his head. Foolish, foolish people.
Preacher fell silent as the little something that had been nagging at him all day finally settled down in the light of his mind. He had known about half of the men behind the voices back yonder in the cave, but yet another voice had been awful familiar to him.
Jack Harris, he blurted.
What? Richard said, looking at the mountain man. What about our guide?
I knowed that voice was familiar. He was one of them back at the cave, I'm sure of it.
Melody scooted closer to him. If that's correct, Preacher, then that means that...
Her voice trailed off, her face frozen in shock.
Yeah, Preacher spoke the word softly. The whole thing wasn't nothing but a setup from the get-go.
Whatever in the world do you mean? Penelope asked.
Them engines spoiled Bum and Jack's plans. They wasn't figuring on them engines attacking. They was going to ambush the wagon train. That's why Jack took y'all so far north of the Oregon Trail.
Edmund was speechless, which, to Preacher's ears, was a great relief.
Penelope sat on the ground, her mouth open.
Yes, Richard finally said. Yes, it has to be. What a thoroughly untrustworthy, black-hearted, and totally reprehensible individual.
Does that mean he's a dirty, low-down, sorry skunk?
Preacher asked.
Yes, that sums it up quite well. Thought so. Well, it means something else, too. It means they got to kill us all. You see, no telling how long Jack's been doing this. You say Jack hooked up with y'all in Missouri?
Well, not exactly, Richard said. 10 days out of Missouri, our guide suddenly disappeared. He'd been out scouting, I think. Well, you can imagine our predicament. We were beside ourselves with worry. We were lost. The next morning, Jack Harris rode in. He was so strong appearing and full of confidence. We practically had to beg him to take on the job of guide.
Where was your wagon master?
Why, I don't suppose we had one.
Just how much begging did y'all have to do before Jack agreed to sign on?
Well, actually not very much.
I thought not. Well, let's fix some victuals and eat up. We got to push hard come the morning. There's some damn rough country ahead.
They crossed the Yellowstone and Preacher took them straight west. He took them over the divide and headed for the Snake. By now, he knew that Bum and his boys would have circled the small range in which the cave was located. They would pick up their trail and be hard on it. By the Lord, Edmund exclaimed one frosty morning in the high country. This land is exhilarating.
Does that mean you like it? Preacher asked.
My word, yes.
You ain't thinking of settling here, is you?
We've discussed it, Melody said sweetly. After all, savages are savages, whether on the West Coast or here. Of course, we shall have to push on to deliver the monies, but we think we shall return to this wonderful and primitive land.
Is that a fact?
Preacher's words were glumly spoken.
Yes, she said brightly. Aren't you excited with the news?
I can tell you truthful, I am pert near overcome.
I knew you would be, darling, she added softly.
Preacher felt like he was standing in quicksand and slowly sinking.
Movement caught his eyes. He looked up. First time in his life, he was happy to see a band of Indians.
7.
Relax, Preacher said. They're Bannocks. I know that brave in the lead. His name is Badfoot.
Badfoot, Edmund said. Why would anybody name a child that?
Probably 'cause he was born with a club foot. Sometimes that's the way Injuns name their young. If I knowed y'all better, I'd tell you a story about a brave I knowed once called Two Dogs Humpin'.
Please don't, Penelope said quickly. Sounds like a delightfully naughty story,
Melody said, her eyes bright. I'm sorry I brung it up, Preacher said, getting to his feet and making the sign of brother to the Indian on the lead pony. Preacher began speaking to the brave in his own tongue, Snake. Badfoot grinned and nodded his head and began rubbing his belly.
They've been buffler hunting, Preacher explained, and they're going to give us some steaks. We got some mighty fine eating coming up, folks.
Ask him if he's ever heard of God, Edmund said, digging in his pack for one of the many small Bibles he'd salvaged from the wagon train ambush.
Ask him yourself. He speaks pretty good English. That's just being polite, speaking his tongue.
Edmund approached the Indian cautiously, holding a Bible in his hands. Badfoot stood smiling at him. Edmund held out the Bible and Badfoot took it.
Thank you, the Indian said. My woman thanks you. She will take it as soon as I return to the lodge. She will use it much more than me.
Edmund's face brightened as he watched Badfoot finger the pages.
Your woman is a Christian?
The others wondered why Preacher was laughing so hard he had to sit down on the ground holding his signs.
No Christian. I take all Bibles offered me. She studies them? My word, we've got to return and live with this tribe.
Studies? No study. Can't read. Pages thin. Make good ass wipe. They stopped early that afternoon. Preacher wanted to get the buffalo steaks on while they were still fresh. Besides, if he was tired, Lord knows what the others were feeling. They camped on the west side of Pacific Creek. Preacher wasn't too worried about Bum and his bunch. He figured they were at least 3 days ahead of them. They'd eat good this afternoon and just lay around and rest. Give the horses a much-needed break, too. He glanced over at Edmund, who still had his lower lip all poked out over Badfoot's refusal to return the Bible. Preacher had been forced to step between the two men before Badfoot forgot he was a peaceful Bannock and went on the warpath. Before leaving, Badfoot had grinned at Preacher and pointed at Edmund. He extended the index finger of his left hand and held it straight up in the air, cupping it with his right hand, making an up-and-down motion.
"What did that savage call me?" Edmund demanded after the Bannocks had left.
"An asshole," Preacher told him, "among other things."
"Well, I never," Edmund said.
"I sure hope not,"
Preacher replied, hiding his grin and certainly not telling the man everything the hand signals had implied. "Although Injuns tolerate that type of thing better than whites do."
"Whatever in the world are you babbling about?" Edmund asked, irritated.
Preacher shook his head. "Skip it." He looked up at the sky. The weather had been perfect ever since leaving the cave in the little valley, but now it was about to turn foul. Preacher figured they'd be in a hard, cold rain long before dusk. He set about building the ladies a crude lean-to. If the men wanted one, they could damn well build it themselves. As for himself, he'd just get up under a tree and sleep with his robe wrapped around him, his back to the tree. Richard and Edmund watched him for a few moments, then set about building their own shelter. Preacher eyeballed them for several minutes and concluded their rickety shelter would collapse before the night was over. Preacher did build a small shelter over the cook fire and then set about broiling the thick buffalo steaks. He got the shelter up just as the rains came. The others watched him and marveled at how much a man Preacher's size could eat. He was gnawing on a half-raw steak while cooking the others.
"Learn this," Preacher said,
Eat when you can, drink when you can, and sleep when you can. Because you don't know when you're going to be able to do any of the three again.
We've been eating rather well and often on this sojourn, Richard pointed out.
You ain't never wintered out here,
Preacher told him. Not quite sure what sojourn meant, but not wanting to appear plumb ignorant. He kind of figured it had something to do with traveling.
Snows can come a-howling this time of year, catch you flat-footed. Makes a fat rabbit look as good as every steak you ever ate.
Will you please stop speaking like some ignorant savage? Edmund yelled at him, startling them all. You have some education, I know you do. Why do you persist in speaking like some addle-brained buffoon?
Bothers you, do it. Preacher adjusted the stakes over the flame. Why is that, Brother Edmund? But Edmund sulked up and sat under his leaky lean-to, refusing to speak. You got something stuck up in your craw, spit it out, brother, Preacher told him. Anger's a vile thing to keep all bottled up, might even make a feller sick. You liable to come down with the collie wobbles, or the knobby noodles, or something worser than that.
There you go again, Edmund broke his silence. I won't even ask you what those ridiculous illnesses might be.
They aren't nothing, brother.
And stop calling me brother. I am not your brother. You don't even worship God. How could you be my brother?
Preacher smiled. You still got your lips all pooched out 'cause of what Badfoot done. And who says I don't worship God? I do in my own way. Who says your way is right and mine is wrong? Why, I've even worshipped the Almighty at the Great Medicine Wheel over in the Bighorns. I bet that's something you never studied in your fancy Eastern colleges.
I've never even heard of it, Edmund muttered.
High up in the mountains it is. About 10,000 feet or more. White stones in a circle, measuring, oh, about 75 or 80 feet. Got 28 spokes. And on a river, about 50-60 miles to the west of there, there's a great stone arrow, pointing direct at the wheel. Lots of stories about them things, but the crow say the sun laid out the wheel to teach the tribe how to make a teepee. I told y'all how the plains Indians feel about the sun and the earth. I'm going to tell you something else. When I stood there in that circle, it got me a strange feeling, I did. Spiritual feeling.
Are the crow dangerous? Richard asked.
Depends on how you look at it. They love to steal horses. They're fine horsemen. I know an old boy named William Gordon, mountain man. He had him a crow chief tell him that if they killed the white man, they wouldn't come back and they couldn't steal no more of the white man's horses. So they'll steal from the white man, but they won't kill him. Howsomever, that don't hold true all the time. You get some young buck looking to make a name for himself so he can impress the girls, he might just take your hair. It don't happen often, but it do happen. All in all, though, I trust the crow not to kill me. But I sleep with one eye on my horses when I'm in their territory. Preacher looked at the stakes and said, "They's ready. Come get this food and eat good."
Over supper, Melody said, "The Indians who attacked the wagon train, Preacher, what did you say they were?"
"Arapaho. Strange bunch of people. They stay to themselves mostly, but sometimes they will hook up with the Cheyenne. They ain't got no use for most white people. They's been talk with the Cheyenne and Arapaho coming together to fight. Both tribes hate the Kiowa. I've been hearing talk that they's gonna band together and head on the warpath against the Kiowa. Odd, 'cause the Kiowa and the Cheyenne used to be friends. I don't know what happened. The Arapaho will tell you he's your friend, but he ain't. Not really. How's your meat?"
"It's delicious," Edmund said. "And please let me apologize for my earlier outburst. It's been, well, a trying time for all of us."
"And it ain't near about over," Preacher thought. "I can't figure where he's taking them," George said. "He's heading straight west." "Has to be Fort Henry on the Yellowstone," Bull said. The huge knot on his head had gone away, but the memory of who gave it to him had not. He dreamed nightly of killing Preacher. "But there ain't no soldier boys there," Bum said.
That's a civilian fort, and that shore ain't getting them folks no closer to the Oregon Trail.
Maybe it is, Jack Harris said. Preacher knows everybody in the wilderness. There's bound to be some trappers and the like hanging around Henry. He could get some of them to ride with him down to Fort Hall for protection and then get them pilgrims hooked up with another wagon train headed west. Once that was done, we'd be out of luck.
How many days you figure they're ahead of us? Bum asked.
Maybe 2, 3 at the most. We're traveling a lot harder than they is, but if we're going to catch up, we got to push harder still.
This ain't getting us no closer, Bobby said, lurching to his feet with the help of a branch he was using for a crutch. Let's ride.
Slug, also using a tree limb for a crutch, rose painfully to his one good foot.
I'll follow Preacher clear to the blue waters if I have to, he said, his face tight with the pain from his broken ankle.
I owe him, and this is one debt I damn sure intend to pay.
Beckman hobbled to his feet, grimacing at the pain in his wounded leg.
Let's ride, boys. Hell, even if we get to Fort Henry and they're still around, there ain't no law there. Can't nobody do nothing to us. If them pilgrims say we attacked them, it's our word again theirs. And there's more us than there is them. If anything's said about our wounds, we'll just say we was attacked by Injuns.
Moses dumped water on the fire and stirred the ashes. Outlaws they were, but none of them wanted to be anywhere near a raging out-of-control forest fire.
Get the horses, Bum said. We got to put some miles behind us.
None of them, Preacher included, knew whether Fort Henry was still operating. Andy Henry had built several forts, beginning back in 1807 when he built a fort on the Yellowstone at the mouth of the Bighorn. Then another fort was built, in 1810, near the confluence of the Jefferson and Madison rivers. Blackfeet destroyed that one. Then in 1811 to 1812, another fort was thrown up on Henry's Fork of the Snake. Blackfeet and hard winters put that one out of business. Back in 23, another sturdier fort was built, and so far as any of the men knew, it was still operating. They could only hope. Preacher plunged them across the Snake and into the wilderness of the Teton Range and into Washington Territory. He picked up the pace, knowing by now that those behind him would have figured out where he was going. Problem was, Preacher didn't know if the fort was still standing, much less in business. He hadn't been over this way in several years. There had been several Injun uprisings in that time. He'd asked Badfoot about it, but the sub-chief had only shrugged his shoulders in reply, which might have meant anything or nothing. With an Injun, you just never knew. The side of Richard's head was still tender to the touch, but the wound had healed nicely. Edmund had gotten over his mad with Preacher. Penelope was still a bitch, for the most part. And Melody, seeing her advances thwarted, had taken to not speaking to Preacher, which suited Preacher just fine. He didn't have time to fool with some love-struck female. If he had any kind of luck in a couple of weeks, he'd be done and through with the whole damn bunch of them, and the entire misadventure would be behind him. With any kind of luck. They rode right into a storm and had to seek shelter from the cold, driving rain that had bits of ice in it. The ice, driven by high winds, cut like tiny knives on bare skin. These late spring storms can be pure hell, Preacher said, almost shouting to be heard over the howl of the wind as it came shrieking down off the mountains. We might wake up in the morning and there'll be a foot of snow on the ground. You just never know this high up.
It sounds like the wailing of a million lost souls, Edmund said. I've never heard or felt anything like this.
That's a right good way of putting it, Preacher agreed. Never had thought of it like that.
But if we can't travel, Richard said, shouting the words, neither can those behind us.
Don't bet on it, Preacher told him. This storm might be local. It might not be doing nothing 15 miles to the east of us.
Sorry.
Preacher managed to throw up a windbreak and get a fire going. But all in all,
it was going to be the most miserable night the pilgrims had yet spent on the trail. Preacher took it in his usual manner, calmly and philosophically. He knew there was no point in bitching about it. There wasn't nothing he nor anyone else could do about it. The rain soon changed to snow, and in a very short time, the land was covered in white. The snow, whipped by the high winds, soon reduced visibility to near zero. "Don't no one stray from camp," Preacher yelled. "You got to relieve yourself, you just step behind the nearest tree. You stray from camp in this, and you'll get lost sure as shooting. You'll be froze to death before we can find you." For once, no one argued with him. The pilgrims were scared and looked it. About midnight, the lean-to that Richard and Edmund built gave up and collapsed. Preacher, wrapped up in a ground sheet and buffalo robe, his back to a tree and his hat brim tied over his ears with a scarf he fastened under his chin, opened one eye and chuckled at the antics of the men as they thrashed around in the cold and snow. "One thing about it," the mountain man thought, "all four of these people will be a sight smarter about the wilderness when this is over. If they survive," he added. Then he closed his eye and went back to sleep, snug in his robe. Neither Richard nor Edmund was in a real good mood come the morning. "I have a head cold," Edmund complained. "I am in dire need of a plaster for my chest and some hot lemonade." "Jesus Christ," Preacher muttered. "I simply must have a cup of hot tea," Richard said. "Do you have any left, Penelope?" "I'll make us some. I have a few leaves left." Preacher had been ruminating on their situation. "Y'all don't need to hurry none," he told them. "We sure ain't going nowheres. We'd leave a trail a drunk blind man could follow."
"That means the hooligans behind us will gain on us," Richard said.
"They'll gain," Preacher admitted. "But I left the trail and turned gradual north early yesterday morning. I didn't figure none of you would notice, and you didn't. Then I cut back south for a few miles and headed west again about noon. That's when I led y'all into that little creek. If y'all had paid attention, you'd have noticed that creek cut back south. A lot of creeks and rivers do flow that way," he added dryly. "Howsomever, Goose Creek does run north. It's a weird creek, but that ain't got nothing to do with us." He pointed. "That mountain right there? It's got about 15 different names. But the Injuns call it Mountain That Takes Life. They say it's evil. I imagine what happened was some sort of sickness killed a bunch of them years back, and they just figure the mountain is evil and won't go near it. That's where we're going soon as the sun melts this snow. Reason I'm telling you all this is that I took us way, way off the trail. Now with the snow, if we just sit tight and don't build no big fires, Bum and them others won't have no idea where we is. They'll just think we kept on the trail westward, and that's the way they'll go. They might even make the fort, if it's still there, 2 or 3 days ahead of us."
"Well, what would be the advantage of them doing that?" Richard asked.
Preacher smiled. "'Cause we ain't gonna go to the fort. Soon as the snow melts, I'm taking y'all southwest to Fort Hall."
8.